Picture this. You're standing in a huge stadium, part of a crowd of maybe 40, 50, 60,000 people, and you're being asked to sing. But you don't mind. You know this song, and you're not alone. Everyone else is going to join in. But here's the thing. Chances are it's a really terrible song. One of the worst songs in the world. So why is everyone singing their hearts out? Welcome to the world of national anthems. The worst songs in the world. This is the start of a series on national anthems and why we need to rethink them. Or, at the very least, make them more representative, more inclusive, and just less, well, nasty. My name is David Pate. I'm a broadcaster, writer, and journalist in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and I've been deeply suspicious of national anthems for decades. In this opening episode, I'm going to tell you why. Pretty much everyone knows the words to their own national anthem. It's taught at schools, sung on national days, and at public ceremonies, and of course, at sporting events. But have you ever thought about what you're singing? Or what the lyrics of other anthems, in different languages, actually mean? Here's one you'll know. The Marseillaise is one of the most recognizable tunes on the planet. It's also a nasty piece of work. It begins with a call to arms and a warning that ferocious soldiers are on their way to cut the throats of your sons and companions. So get ready to march and to water the fields with their impure blood. Wow, that's quite the statement of your national intent. But it's by no means the nastiest of national anthems. This one isn't as well known. But it's even bloodier than the French anthem. Algeria's song kicks off with streams of generous blood being shed, and then goes on to say how the soldiers of revolution have taken the noise of gunpowder as our rhythm, and the sound of machine guns as our melody. Just ask yourself this. If your 10-year-old kid started singing those kind of lyrics, would you join in or start wondering if you should maybe pay more attention to what they're downloading? In the interest of full disclosure, I have to confess that I've sung one of the world's bad anthems many times. That's Flower of Scotland, which isn't an official anthem because Scotland isn't technically a country, if you use membership of the United Nations or appearances at the Olympics as a measuring stick. But hey, I'm Scottish, and I know Scotland is a country. And maybe one day, in the not-too-distant future, it will be truly independent again and start thinking about an official anthem. What I say is, don't pick Flower of Scotland. Once again, it's the lyrics. What the song is about is beating the English. Fair enough, that's long been a priority for the Scots, and for quite a few other countries around the world. But the victory in Flower of Scotland happened in 1314.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Okay, before you call me out, I know that Braveheart isn't about the battle and Flower of Scotland, but I couldn't resist the clip. The Flower of Scotland battle was at Bannockburn, long after Mel Gibson's big win. And Bannockburn was a big deal. It secured Scottish independence from England. And, as the song goes, it sent proud Edward's army homewards to think again. But think about it. 1314, more than 700 years ago. I mean, there must be something that's happened in Scotland since then that's worth celebrating that doesn't involve fighting the English. If you're going to pick a song to represent what your nation stands for in the 21st century, is a 14th century battle really the best choice? As the song says, think again. So how did all this start? How did we end up with these bloody, resentful, machine-gunning anthems? Well, I can do the Scottish thing and blame the English. And to be fair, it really is mostly their fault, and partly because of Scotland too. That song dates back to 1745, a tumultuous time in British history. Scotland was in revolt. The Union was threatened, and Loyalists wanted to show their allegiance to the King. The original opening line was "God save great George R. King." The song caught on and was soon being played everywhere the king showed up. It didn't take long for other monarchs to decide they wanted a theme song too. Who wouldn't want a bunch of people singing about how great you are every time you go to the theatre or open a festival? And in those more innocent, copyright-free times, the simplest thing to do was just to grab the tune and come up with your own version of God Save, whoever you happen to be. So Norway got the King's Song. Prussia got this. And once the race to get an anthem started, there was no stopping it. The anthem craze spread across Europe. Of course, it didn't really matter back then that so many places were using the same tune, because there were no Olympics, no World Cup, no visiting heads of state. So Switzerland hung on to its God Save the King tune until the 1960s. And here's what Liechtenstein's anthem still sounds like. Once sports got into the anthem business, it was all downhill. Most countries, particularly those without kings, hadn't paid much attention to the whole national song thing. There was certainly no pressing need to have an official song, and few occasions when such a song needed to be played. If you had to pick a moment when that changed, it would be December 16th, 1905. The place? Cardiff, Wales. The occasion? The New Zealand rugby team was on tour, destroying all opposition. And now they were taking on Wales. The all-black tradition of performing the Maori war dance, the haka, was already established. And just like today, most opponents had no idea how to counter the intimidating spectacle. But this time, something different happened. The crowd of 45,000 people responded to the haka by bursting into the Welsh national song. Here's how the Cardiff Evening Express described the scene. The blacks had brought over the Maori war song with them, and it reeked of blood. With arms extended and with stamping feet, they faced the Welsh team and said the most cruel things. It was good Maori, phonetically rendered, but it was in the waving of arms, stamping of feet, and screwing of chins that the strength lay. In answer came the rolling heart tones of the Welsh singing, strident with calm confidence, greatly comforting. This had a great effect on the colonists. They have since acknowledged that it took immediate hold of them and that Wales had already scored. And Wales won. It was New Zealand's only defeat of their 35-game tour. And the idea of inspiring your side against all odds by singing an anthem was born. And then the Olympics got in on the act, and all of a sudden, everyone had to have an anthem. Not only that, but it had to be an anthem that fit the rules, which for the Olympics is no more than 80 seconds. Until then, anthems could be as long as you wanted. Uruguay's anthem runs to around 5 minutes. So some editing was required. And here's where an opportunity was missed. Because if you're going to edit your anthem, then maybe you should actually take out all the really bad stuff, you know, the machine guns. Maybe that stuff in the Vietnamese anthem about the path to glory is built by the bodies of our foes. And there are quite a few anthems that just assume everyone is ready to lay down their lives for their country. We are ready to die, sing the Italians cheerfully. Unfortunately, it's really hard to change a national anthem. Just look at how long it took to make one small adjustment to O Canada. That song didn't officially become Canada's anthem until 1980, but even back then the glaring absence of any contribution by women was pretty obvious. So what about our daughters? People wanted them included, so year after year, decade after decade, people tried to change the anthem and got nowhere. Politicians kept introducing bills and they kept getting defeated. And then some hope. A new Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, came to power and promised to make women equal partners in government.
I understand one of the priorities for you was to have a cabinet that was gender balanced. Why was that so important to you?
Because it's 2015.
The time for change had finally arrived. Canada got a new inclusive anthem. Changing anthems may be hard, but sometimes it's necessary, like when your anthem is associated with one of the most evil regimes in history. After the Nazis were defeated in 1945, the new West German state kept the tune. After all, it was composed by Haydn, so it would be hard to get a more A-list composer. But they decided to drop the lyrics used during the Nazi regime. Those lyrics weren't inherently bad, but they did begin with the words Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles in der Welt, which translates as Germany over all, over everyone in the world. Not a great message in the post-war world, so they adopted the third verse of the same poem with its more user-friendly message of unity and freedom. It's a shame they skipped over verse 2, which records how German women, German wine, and German song inspire the people to noble deeds. A missed opportunity. Let's do a quick check here. Remember we listened to the start of the Uruguayan anthem a few minutes ago? Well, it's almost over now, so let's catch the big finish. So, back to the German anthem and the new lyrics. The thing is, lots of people didn't notice the change, which led to a terribly embarrassing moment in 2017 when Germany played the US in a tennis match in Hawaii.
Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles in der Welt.
The German team wasn't impressed. The players and fans sang the correct words, but the man with the microphone wasn't to be stopped. Apologies followed. Messing up national anthems happens quite a bit. Sometimes it's a matter of pressing the wrong button on the playlist. Sometimes it's through head-scratching stupidity. Like back in 2012, when the Kazakhstan anthem was played at a shooting competition in Kuwait. Except that isn't the Kazakhstan anthem, not even close. It's the parody anthem from the comedy movie Borat. It turns out that the person responsible for organising the anthems had just done a Google search and downloaded what they thought was the correct song. Almost as embarrassing as playing the wrong anthem is playing the right one badly. The world is forever grateful to the BBC camera operator who was on hand to record the anthem played by a military band when the British Foreign Secretary arrived in Libya in 2017. That is definitely in a league of its own, but there are other contenders. In the video clip of Russian President Vladimir Putin's visit to Saudi Arabia in 2019, you can see him wince as the Saudi band mangles Russia's anthem. I feel we have to set the record straight on this and let you hear what it should sound like. You do have to ask, what's the point of playing an anthem when a foreign dignitary arrives? But if you do have to do it, why don't you just ask your guest to either bring their own band or a favourite recording? Of course, if you really don't like the anthem, you can always boo it. But that carries risks. When China started to roll back freedoms in Hong Kong, some people chose to protest by booing the Chinese anthem at soccer games. As you can imagine, that did not go down well in Beijing. The response was to introduce harsh new laws criminalizing insults to the national anthem. When you have the power of the state behind you, the anthem becomes a test of loyalty, and failing that test can be devastating. But the pressure to sing isn't confined to dictatorships. Just look at the reaction to NFL athletes kneeling during the American anthem to protest against police brutality and racial injustice.
You have to stand proudly for the national anthem. Well, you shouldn't be playing. You shouldn't be there. Maybe you shouldn't be in the country. You have to stand proudly for the national anthem.
The U.S. is the world's most anthem-obsessed nation, playing the Star-Spangled Banner at almost every public event, no matter how small. And some of the greatest offences against that anthem aren't committed by protesters, but by the singers. It turns out the US anthem can be difficult to sing, and that's one reason why some people have been trying for years to replace it with another song. America the Beautiful has always been a contender. Also, bizarrely, the patriotic hymn My Country 'Tis of Thee. Why is that one bizarre? Well, take a listen.
My country 'tis of thee, sweet land of of thee I sing, land where my father...
Sound familiar? But there are many people who want to get rid of the Star Spangled Banner because of who wrote it. Francis Scott Key was a slave owner, and there's a problematic third verse in the anthem that mentions slaves. Of course, as we've seen, there are lots of anthems that have problems with words. And there is a solution. If your words are terrible, dump them. If you insist on playing an anthem at public events, follow the example of four of the world's countries and do without lyrics. Kosovo, Bosnia and Herzegovina, San Marino and Spain have lyricless anthems. With the exception of San Marino, that's not because of an enlightened recognition that anthems are inherently awful. It's because those countries are still recovering from brutal civil wars, and no one has yet found the words to unite them. As for San Marino, the people just don't seem to want any words, and they're probably better off without them. And this takes us back to where it all began. Remember that Welsh rugby team inspired to victory over the New Zealand All Blacks by the crowd singing? So if you don't have words in your anthem, how can the team be raised to new heights? Spain shows it's not necessary. With just a tune, the Spanish soccer team managed to win back-to-back European championships in 2008 and 2012 and the World Cup in 2010. If you can't find the words to include everyone, then maybe standing in silence is the best choice.